You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 16 May. Japanese quarter-on-quarter GDP released a few hours ago, -0.2%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Skullglow, PSG, Old Oak, China tariffs reduced, opportunity perhaps for Chinese stocks, and then a quick thought on the PPC update. Nishlin Govender from Citadel, big tech, the challenges, and are there any opportunities? And then thoughts on me, actively managed certificates, really some great products, I think it's worth spending some time finding out more about some of them. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb: Rand surges after South Africa flags inflation target change. Reuters: Walmart warns of higher prices due to tariffs. Holds off on second quarter guidance. They said they will start raising prices later this month due to the higher cost from tariffs. Morning markets, the US was green, S&P 0.4% higher, the Nasdaq up 0.1%. The East is red, Sydney down 0.4%, Tokyo off 0.25%, Hong Kong 0.67% lower, and Tencent 1.8% down. Commodities green. Gold futures $3,215 an ounce. Brent $64.53. Platinum $990. Palladium $959. The Rand is 18.01. Bitcoin $104,100. And top 40 opening call about 100 points to the green, 0.1% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Skullglow, PSG, Old Oak. Skulk, appreciate the time. As I was saying in the intro there, with the older tariffs, and by older, what, I think they were there last week, we had the 145% tariffs each way, 125% from China, which basically, I imagine, shuts down trade. No one's going to trade with plus 100% tariffs. They're lowered, still there, but it does suggest that there will be some meeting of the minds, shall we say, around the tariffs. Is China investable for you? Is there opportunity? I mean, I was just having a look at some of the big tech. It's cheap. Your thoughts?
Good morning, Simon, and good morning to all the listeners. Thanks for having me. Yeah, that's the question. The question is, did we miss the boat? Because let's start from the beginning. I mean, yes, it's not 145% tariffs anymore. It's been reduced, and when I say reduced, it's just an interim. They're still very, very much in negotiations, reduced to 30%, for the next 90 days, and we saw the after effect. I mean, Monday, Tuesday, we had a wonderful market. I think if I can quote President Donald Trump, it was a beautiful, wonderful market. But I mean, yes, you mentioned it. China really is this the opportunity to go and invest in China? Is this sort of the green light? So let's start off with the first question. 30%. If it stays at 30%, this is going to have a massive, massive effect on the Chinese economy. If we can trust the data that we've seen coming out of China, because remember, they've sort of been using their own calculations, not really having the statistics that we've been used to. But if we can believe this, the data that they've been providing, it does seem like China is sort of getting out of that bad economic environment that they've seen 2 years ago. But remember, 30% is going to have a massive negative effect again on the economy. And I'm just a little bit worried that we sort of out of the blocks now saying, well, it's not 145%, it's 30%. It's most probably going to come down lower than 30%. I don't know. I mean, if you look at the uncertainty and some of the really, really smart people out there, they seem to be divided. They think 30% could be the norm and we could even go higher. Let's look at the actual facts. I mean, you mentioned the tech stocks. You know me. I love comparing apples with apples. And, just like you, I do like monitoring them through international ETFs. Now, there's two beautiful ETFs The one is the First Trust Dow Jones Internet ETF. Mm-hmm. That looks at the U.S. internet companies, very well-known companies. I mean the likes of the Metas, Amazons, Alphabets, which is Google, you know, well-known internet, U.S. internet companies. And I've compared them against the CranShares CSI China internet company. So, and this is an interesting one because over the past few years, there's been a massive discrepancy. I mean, the U.S. internet stocks totally outran the Chinese stocks, naturally. But this year, there's sort of been a reversion. Up to yesterday, the U.S. internet stocks has been flat. Well, flat is sort of a win. If you looked at this a month ago, you would have looked horrible. But they flat for the year, while the Chinese internet stocks up over 17% in dollar terms. When we look at local front, the likes of Naspers, Prosus, yeah. Also lately, Richemont also became sort of a proxy for China. Naspers up over 27%, Prosus over 24%, and even Richemont up over 20% for 2025. My question is just, was the easy money made? Do you want to really go in now? I would just be very, very careful. Like these companies still think that they sort of lag the US counterpart, but I think the easy money has been made.
Yeah, I take a point. And 30%, you know, it's not 145, but it's still a big number. It's still a big number. Let's change track completely. PPC trading update yesterday. Not a bad little update. Of course, they're upgrading some of their Western Cape plants as well. Looking nice. I mean, the big trick, of course, is we need volume. I mean, then we need to be building stuff in South Africa, and maybe that's their biggest hurdle. But otherwise, the turnaround seems on track.
Yeah, let's start off. I mean, this is a sort of a local is lacquer company. I mean, when PPC brings out good results, I sort of always feel, you know, going to use the word again, lacquer, because that tells us we are growing. But when we look at the stats numbers, and when I look at the stats numbers, I look at the stats where they look at the buildings that's been completed for the year, and they are just used non-residentials. We're still sitting at volumes that we've last seen 2001, 2002. So not a lot of buildings really being completed. But, I mean, give this new CEO, Matthias Cardarelli, and hopefully I pronounced that right. I mean, he actually got this turnaround strategy, which he called Awaken the Giant. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is you can see that they actually, and it's not been an easy environment. I mean, to grow their hips the way they've done. And remember, this is only a trading statement, but clearly you can see it's going to be growing between 37.3 cents and 41 cents from last year's 19 cents. That's a massive growth. We recently had Afrimat's results, and when we look at those cement business performance in there, they made a loss of 285 million rand for the year. So you can clearly see it's been a tough environment. While PPC, what is that Awaken the Giant? They say, you know, plant, you know, sourcing optimization, improve sales group mix, reduce thermal energy cost, you know, better logistics management. They've clearly done that, and it's looking good.
Good. But that's a terrifying number. We're basically sideways over two decades of production. Skoklo, PSG Old Oak, always appreciate the early morning. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Sitting with Nishlin Govender, he's a Citadel portfolio manager. Shall we appreciate the time today? Big tech, Mag 7, Fangs, call them what we will. They were having a absolutely rip-roaring time. Things started to weaken a bit last year. This year, I've actually decided to squeeze at some of them. I mean, they've bounced off the lows, but it really does help us understand that there might be titans of the economy, but they are vulnerable to macroeconomic shocks, trade wars, and regulations.
Yeah. Hi, Simon. Hi to your listeners. It's true. I wrote a piece about them in the midst of the turmoil. So when they were at their lowest point, it's nice to see them bouncing back now. I have to say, in the context of the turmoil, my refrain was the sell-off seems overdone in the context of how defensive these companies are inside our macroeconomies, as well as given the growth that they have that's sort of idiosyncratic of anything that's happening globally. So if anything, I think it just shows that the market can sometimes be a little bit irrational. Yeah. I'm very respectful of the market, but it can be a little bit irrational in selling things, especially when something seems to have gone up too much in the market's opinion.
And it's that too much. And it's almost, a lot of folks are saying, oh, deja vu to the dot-com. And I remember the dot-com. I mean, I was a kid back then. I got caught up in the hype to a degree. This is fundamentally different. I mean, to your point, these are giant businesses. These are, in many cases, you know, think of the likes of the Apples, the Microsofts. They have moats. This isn't a dot-com where it really was, I don't know, it was smoke and mirrors in many cases.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. And I think as humans, we find comfort in comparing what we're experiencing now to something we've experienced in the past. And when it comes to tech, I think enough of us have been burnt by the dot-com bubble to go, hey, this feels a little bit like the same, but the companies, you're right, are fundamentally different. During the dot-com bubble, we had no profits, let alone revenue at the stage for a number of companies we were buying. And now you've got companies with significant moats, large cash balances on their balance sheet. I mean, they're an important part of our lives, already generating revenue from themes like AI and data centers. So fundamentally different business models today.
That is a fair point. And in many cases, they're actually not just profitable, but in many cases, I mean, they're not even that expensive anymore. I'm thinking NVIDIA. I first looked at it on a 80 PE, and that's a very simplistic PE methodology, but it's now sub 30. I mean, they've in many cases grown into the valuations.
Yeah, exactly. I think we've gotten very used to looking at a PE number and going, you know, it might be too high. But with NVIDIA, the PE has actually gone high. It's the earnings that have come in the denominator to support it. It's very, very true. I think at the peak of this run that we've seen, which was January this year, a couple of them did look expensive. Your Apples, for example, sure. Teslas, NVIDIA to a certain extent. Where we're sitting now, even after the bit of the rally that we've seen since the sort of calm after Liberation Day, companies like Microsoft, Amazon, NVIDIA are still trading at a discount. I would call NVIDIA fairly valued, but things like Amazon and Microsoft are trading at 10% discounts to their fair value. We've got Meta at a 15% discount of fair value. Apple's fairly valued. It's very rare to find such high-quality companies that are still growing at those kinds of valuations.
And so critically important. I mean, you mentioned Microsoft. Listeners will forgive me for quoting this again. Aside from their Azure, which is the cloud business, my annual subscription for my office has come along for renewal. They're pushing the price up 30%, and I'm going to pay because what else am I going to do?
Funny you say that. That's kind of the refrain I say to people, because when I talk about AI or the data center or the cloud, people often go, well, you're talking about something that I'm never going to use. Mm. But when you make it tangible, you are paying for office every single month. Many corporates, I would call it most corporates in South Africa, are paying subscription revenues. They're now taking on the Azure service to sort of bulletproof their businesses from a cloud perspective. That revenue is real, that revenue is growing, and they definitely have pricing power. We think of the seven, Microsoft's the best positioned, just in terms of their ability to monetize everything related to AI, tech, and data centers inside our lives.
And particularly in AI, they're on sort of both sides. They've got the data centers, they've also got their deal with OpenAI. And stay with AI a second, because there are some challenges coming, perhaps specifically to NVIDIA, who really are at the heart of it. They are kind of, you talk around in the gold rush, you buy the shovel maker, NVIDIA is the chip maker, semiconductors, but they are seeing threat from China.
If you're talking about threat from China, there's a couple of levels, because China's got so good at what they do from a number of aspects that there's a national security risk. So we saw restrictions on some of the NVIDIA chips. That's one risk to an investor's portfolio. And we have seen NVIDIA sell off a little bit because of that. The other angle is the DeepSeek angle, where Chinese companies seem to be able to innovate differently. I have to say that one's a little bit of a misnomer, in our opinion at least. There was a lot of money spent to get DeepSeek to where it was. It did require a lot of NVIDIA computing power, which I think just supports the NVIDIA narrative. And they may have done it in an inventive way, but the way the system works in terms of DeepSeek, you do actually still need a lot of computing power. So NVIDIA, from the DeepSeek perspective, I think it actually validates the story rather than hinders it. I think we're more concerned now about the national security risk, where certain countries might ring fence companies and say, listen, you can't do business in certain areas of the world. And that's something we haven't seen for decades. So that's brand new. And that sort of, we're going to call it regulatory risk, I guess, is something that we need to sort of think about in the context of the next few years.
And you make a great point there. I mean, let's take DeepSeek. I mean, sure, I mean, they certainly did some clever stuff. Make no mistake about that. But in essence, if anything, they kind of legitimize artificial intelligence, prove its value, which again takes us to a degree to NVIDIA, but also takes us back to Microsoft and that Copilot, which they put into all of their office software. They have got the Azure, and it kind of almost adds an extra tailwind to the giants out there.
Yeah, it's 100% true. Everyone's trying to make AI native to however we're interacting with them. So, I mean, WhatsApp now has an AI chat that's part of your list. If you go onto Twitter or X, there's a Grok link as part of that that you can use quite comfortably. On an Android phone, you can use Gemini quite easily. And Apple's kind of incorporating the same thing now. It's this arms race where everyone wants you to start to be comfortable with their version of AI, that it becomes incorporated and adopted in your life. And all of it seems free for now, for most of us. But there will come a point where they will start to charge some sort of recurring revenue once you've embedded it in their lives. So that's the projection into profit that we see for these companies over the next couple of years.
A last question, a last stock we haven't touched on, Alphabet. They obviously got cloud. They've got a Netflix monster within their stable. And then, of course, they've got Google itself. There's a search engine. Does AI threaten them and search? I use Perplexity. I hardly ever go to Google anymore. Or do they use their AI and manage to come through this okay?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think inside the complex of Google companies, there are some very good businesses. If you think about YouTube, Waymo that sits in other bits, the Android operating system, but they still generate too much of their revenue and profit from search. And you're right, many people are not searching via Google like they used to, so it is a threat. I think Google has been ahead of the curve in AI development, even though they didn't put it out to customers. There are a number of examples online that you can sort of find on that. So I think Google still has the development pedigree that they could come out with some very cool products. If your listeners want to check it out, there's something called Notebook LM, which Google have put out. And you can basically put in any form of media into that and have a podcast created for you. You could have summaries done, minutes done. You can ask questions. So I wouldn't count Google out just yet, but off the six, I'll exclude Tesla from this. Off the six, Google has the biggest threat to its revenue. So it really needs to start working hard to generate that AI revenue and to be ahead of the rest of them.
Yeah, and I will second that Notebook LM, and apparently they're going to be bringing video to it, I think later this month or maybe early June. We'll leave it there. Sushin Govender, Citadel Portfolio Manager, appreciate the time.
That's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Big tech, I mean, it's a moving part. See, we just chatted big tech, of course, with Skulk. Now we talk, it was China tech, this is US tech. Are you buying? Are you holding? Are you heading for the hills? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
AMCs, actively managed certificates. And we have chatted with these before, Nurina Fisser explaining them. Essentially, unit trusts that trade on the JSE. And then, of course, the fund manager is buying and selling within that actively managed certificate. And there are about 65 listed on our market. And there's some really, really great ideas. And I think it's well worth digging into it. There's small caps, local and offshore. Private credit in the US, we chat with Harris Gore from time to time. Tech unicorns, Craig and Tony's running one of those. There's a fuel one. There's a commodity one with Andy Pfaff. The hedge funds using machine learning. I've been doing a series of webcasts around these and chatting with the different managers. And there really are great methodologies, great managers, sort of not necessarily for a core of a portfolio, not even necessarily for the bulk of a portfolio. But if you're looking for thematics, if you're looking for special themes, tactical positions and spaces you're potentially looking to add to your portfolio, I've got to say, I think AMCs are worth a shot. As I say, we have talked to managers. We have talked around them generally. We certainly will be doing more on them. But I do think it's a space that investors will be well rewarded for having a good hard look at. That's it for today. We're chatting with Petli Radin. He's yesterday from Hirenia Capital. We were talking Sasol. It stayed in the MSCI World Index. The chart was looking good. It hadn't panicked when oil went below 60. We asked if it was finally time for Sasol to rally. Of course, the market hates us and Sasol went down 4%. But a third each said, yes, finally. The other third said, staying away. And then the rest was split between, nope, been burnt too often and no, need more evidence. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again Monday. Those horror Afrimat numbers.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.